KBOO is currently running a Kickstarter campaign to build a city of media makers. From February 8th to March 9th, you can become a media maker and help spread the word. Just go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter between now and March 9th to join.
We found this problem in Atlanta. We found it in Washington, D.C. We found it in San Antonio, Texas, and Detroit, Michigan, and Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Tacoma, Washington, all over the country. 61 metropolitan areas.
We're going to have to leave it there, Aaron,
found.
But we will link to your piece, Kept Out. And thanks so much to Rochelle Farrell. I'm Amy Goodman with Nirmin Sheikh.
Have you heard?
KBOO hosts beloved Community in Action movie nights every third Thursday at 7 p.m. right here at the radio station. On February 15th, we'll show the film Real Injun, a Canadian documentary film that explores the portrayal of Native Americans in film. Real Injun is illustrated with excerpts from classic and contemporary portrayals of Native people in Hollywood movies and interviews with filmmakers, actors, and historians. Again, that's a screening of Real Injun for the KBOO Beloved Community in Action movie night on Thursday, February 15th at 7 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
When we are given an opportunity to share our stories, opinions, thoughts, and ideas in a meaningful manner with each other over the airwaves, not only does it increase our collective knowledge of what it means to be human, but our stories also have the potential to influence the public dialogue. This is the power of KBOO. You help expand the conversation, invest in future media makers, and join us on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
My name is Gregory McKelvey, and I am here hosting Voices from the Edge today. You're listening to KBOO Radio. I want to take a second to plug the Kickstarter campaign that's going on, so please, if you have the ability, go and give to the Kickstarter. KBOO's Kickstarter campaign will help build a strong infrastructure for the next generation of culture workers and DJs. So please spread the word to your friends and communities that we need to raise funds to support the future media makers. Thank you for supporting KBOO through Kickstarter today at kboo.fm/Kickstarter. So I am Greg McKelvey, and I am hosting just for this month, so I'll be here one more time next Thursday. Today we have a great show for you. I am with comedian Andy Main, but first we are going to talk with Garrett Auer. Did I say it right?
That's correct.
Okay, so we're going to talk to Garrett about net neutrality, right, and municipal broadband. I am the least techie person. I mean, like, it's hard because, like, I'm a millennial, obviously, so, like, I grew up with phones and stuff. I just don't know what any of the words mean and how any of it works and any of that. But I knew that net neutrality was a big deal. And so, please, what are you working on around town right now?
Sure. So let me go into the net neutrality bit first. So you might have heard net neutrality recently in the context of it being repealed through a recent FCC decision. What that means is now a small handful of corporations who control internet infrastructure now have the ability to control what you see and do on the internet by blocking and slowing down access to content. Obviously, that's very dangerous and not a very popular decision. This is in addition to the recent move to repeal essential internet privacy regulations. The telecom lobbyists have been making a lot of progress against the American people recently. They've been pushing these agendas, which are tremendously unpopular with good reason. So these two events are kind of a good example of what's been going on recently as far as that goes. And our group has emerged to counter this by creating public internet infrastructure owned and maintained by cities. So this is what municipal broadband is, and as a recent Harvard study showed, it's a much better way of providing what is an essential utility in the 21st century. Without access to the internet, you can't apply for a job. You can't get an education. And here in Portland Public Schools, our students are given iPads that they can't use without access to Wi-Fi. So we need to stop treating it like a commodity and start treating it like the public utility that it is. So that's the message that we're promoting, and we have a solid plan to reach that place.
And is there a model, like is there another city doing this? Is there another utility here that would work similarly to how you want this to be working?
Yeah, so this is actually not a new thing. There are cities all across the U.S. that have municipal broadband. Two local examples would be Sandy, Oregon and Tacoma, Washington.
Whoa, Sandy, Oregon, progressive capital of the West Coast, right?
It makes so much sense that a lot of cities are jumping on board with this, and it makes sense that Portland should as well. It's something we considered doing 10 years ago, kind of got cold feet because not as many cities were doing it, but now it's been proven, it's been tested in other cities, and it's something that we should be initiating.
So am I correct in saying that like net neutrality affects this, or was this just, is this in something that need to happen because of the lack of net neutrality, or what's the relationship between municipal broadband and net neutrality?
So what's one of the great things right now about municipal broadband, and the reason there's this huge resurgence in the call for it, is that it guarantees permanent net neutrality because it puts municipalities in control of the internet provider, and they don't have any incentive to block or slow down access to content for extra money as ISPs do. So it's a way of ensuring that essential internet freedom.
And how do we pay for it?
That's a great question. So that's something that people often bring up in opposition to this without knowing that the plan for it is to actually fund it through a bond sale. So that means taxpayers are not going to be paying for the service. And once it's established, it'll be maintained just the same way that other utilities are through people who are using the service. And of course, a core part of our plan also is digital equity. That means making it available for free to anyone who doesn't have the money to pay for it.
So is it something that like you would subscribe to, or is it a tax, or?
It is subscription-based.
Okay, so I don't have to be paying if I don't like use the internet or something like that.
Yes.
So it's not... So it's not like the highway or something like that where everybody pays a tax and then even if you don't drive, you're still paying into that?
Correct. It is like other utilities in that you can choose to have the service, you can choose to not have it. And if you choose to have it, then you just pay a subscription for it. So it works like the internet service that you're receiving now from that standpoint, only you'll be paying a lot less.
And is the internet good?
Oh, it's very good. And that's the other thing about this is that it's going to be a fiber network. Mm-hmm. And that means
I have
ultra
no
fast
idea what that means.
Gigabit speeds.
Fibers like in your shirt?
Fiber as in a different method of delivering internet access to the home and to other places that is just much faster than the infrastructure that is currently in place and that what you're getting right now through Comcast and in some places CenturyLink, although CenturyLink is increasingly implementing fiber.
Yeah, and so would it exist alongside Comcast as well, or is it like supposed to be a government monopoly on the internet?
So this would exist alongside Comcast. Mm. Initial conversations were, you know, like, can we use eminent domain on them? And, you know, stuff like this. But it's like I was saying before, their infrastructure sucks. We don't want it. So it makes more sense to just build out our own infrastructure and outcompete Comcast.
And I feel like, is it because Comcast basically does have a monopoly on the internet here that the internet sucks?
Yes, they have no reason to compete. They have no reason to improve. They don't need to.
Because there's no competition.
Yeah. And, you know, this is nice because it creates a permanent, inexpensive option uh-huh. for internet access that is also high quality, because the city gets more out of there being access to, out of its people having access to information at high speeds than a business does. Business is just looking for the profit. The city gets a tremendous amount of other benefits from it that are more long-term and abstract. It's also really important to stress, this is something I meant to mention earlier, how important net neutrality is for democracy moving forward here, not only because people need access to information in order to cast a vote, but also because there's nothing stopping ISPs right now from blocking or slowing down the website of a politician who opposes them, or websites of activist groups who oppose them. And that's really kind of getting into this and why it's so important, you know, with all these other issues that are going on right now, is the internet is this fantastic tool to connect people to causes they care about. It's a great equalizer in terms of getting your voice out there. And that this really has the potential to threaten that. The repeal of net neutrality makes the most vulnerable people even more vulnerable. So that's something important to take into consideration from a digital equity perspective.
So is it hackable, or like, you know, how we had the Russian government, as well as probably other governments, interfering in our election? Is there a way we can like start fighting? Does this affect that at all, or our ability to fight against that, or is it completely unrelated?
So I would say that that kind of hacking is pretty unrelated. What I will say, though, as far as that goes, is that security is another major advantage of municipal broadband, in that not so much through hacking, but through Comcast and other ISPs giving away or selling information about what you do on the internet, because that was the other big victory they achieved in 2017, was being given legal free rein to do that. And net neutrality or municipal broadband would ensure that your user data is always protected.
So just a couple more questions. You're pretty convincing, right? I'm sold. What is the arguments against it? I just don't understand why this would not have already been done, given what you're saying.
Yes. So the big thing was, you know, we actually did a feasibility study on this 10 years ago, and the results came back pretty positive. We kind of got cold feet for a few reasons. One was that, you know, there's this fear of 5G, this fear of wireless making wired connection obsolete.
Why is that a fear? Wouldn't that be good?
It'd be awesome if it were possible. However, it isn't for a number of reasons. One is you have to take into consideration that 5G right now and this wireless technology is being hyped by the industries that are selling it. It's just due to the technology itself and, you know, the laws of physics, it's only possible to get so much wireless connectivity in a given space. Mm-hmm. Wireless interferes with itself, which is why when you go into densely populated areas, it's harder to get a signal, your internet is slower. 5G is not going to change that to a dramatic extent. Mm-hmm. And something else to take into consideration there is wherever you have 5G, you're still going to need fiber going from tower to tower. So you're still going to need to run that fiber. It just makes sense to run fiber directly to the home, because it's a better long-term investment. Wireless technology is going to keep moving forward. It's going to keep advancing. Fiber, it just makes sense to get that infrastructure in place so that we're always going to be able to have that. It's just decades it'll be good for.
Okay. I have no idea what half of those words meant, but but you sound like you know what you're talking about. So how do we do it? Like, who needs to be convinced? What needs to happen? What's the process moving forward?
So the first ask that we're making right now is that City Council and the County Board approve a new feasibility study like the one which was done 10 years ago. For municipal broadband in Multnomah County. In addition, for them to create an oversight committee for the project. That's kind of going to be our first ask in the coming months. Following that, as that feasibility study is being worked on, we will be putting together a comprehensive plan for municipal broadband in Multnomah County with a collection of community partners.
Mm-hmm.
So, and following that, we'll wrap it all together in a comprehensive plan and then put that up to a vote.
Cool. So is there anything else you want to add? What are you working on? Is there an event? Is there a page to like? How do we support this?
Yeah, so we're very focused on Facebook. We have a very active Facebook group that I encourage you to join, as well as our website, municipalbroadbandpdx.org. If you want to stay posted on events and everything else that's going on, subscribe to our mailing list there. We have meetings every single week and a rally every single month. So if it sounds like something you'd like to get participated in, get in contact with us.
What kind of rally is this? This seems like a pretty nerdy rally.
Oh, that's a great question. So
I have a feeling there's like Antifa doesn't show up to the net neutrality rallies.
you know, not so much, but.
Well, they probably do. They're just not in their costume.
Yes. what we try to do with these rallies is kind of, give people a different, interesting experience. Because, it's kind of difficult to keep people engaged with something like this on a regular basis.
I know, I'm already bored.
It's like, once a month, it's a lot. So to get people coming back, what we're doing is kind of having something different, interesting every month. What we did last time was we had typewriters and we used analog technology to convey a message about digital equity to city council. Those love letters to municipal broadband, as we called it, were delivered on Valentine's Day. So every month we're kind of coming up with events like this to keep people engaged.
All right, I got an idea.
What's that?
Everybody plays Pokemon Go.
Oh.
Be a rally of Poke Goers. You don't like it?
It's not finalized. Oh, no, I love it.
Cool.
I come from a background of game design. I mean, you actually hit really close to home there with an idea that we're considering.
Really?
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of augmented reality games for social organizing.
Okay, well, I want my cut.
You'll get all of the...
The proceeds from the protest. I hear it's quite lucrative.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, Garrett, thank you so much for being here and talking about this. And one more time, what's the website?
That is municipalbroadbandpdx.org.
Beautiful. You ain't got to go home, but you got to get out of here. All right. Well, thank you so much, Garrett. That was awesome. I didn't understand much of it, but he sounds like he really gets it.
I want to have him on our island when the plane crashes. Like, that guy needs to live so that he can rebuild on a desert island.
Okay, but hopefully on the other side of the island, because that's too much information.
It's just important to have a dude like that in our society, because... You and I don't know what he said at all, but
it
sounded great.
I have no idea. It sounded like he really knew. It also sounded like, God, good thing we didn't do a whole show on that. We would have had no callers. It's good. How come the most important stuff is sometimes the most boring stuff? That sucks.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of why we're at this point, right? Because it's like I voted every year, but I didn't know how the government worked until 2016.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now we have to be like all super involved in the little details because mm-hmm. they don't know how to do it.
I had to figure out what the difference was between a congressman and a senator. It was crazy.
Oh, no.
I know.
I'm just a bill. Like, that's like one of the most popular songs right now because everybody's like reviewing. They're like, wait, how is this happening? I didn't even get a chance to introduce you. Well, hold on. So please. I'm going to shout it out one more time to support the Kickstarter on KBOO. That's kboo.fm/Kickstarter. kboo.fm/Kickstarter. We're also going to be taking calls later in the show, hopefully. The number to call in is 503-231-8187. Again, that's 503-231-8187. So if you want to call in, that would be great. So I'm sitting here with comedian Andy Main.
Good morning.
Good morning. Is it a good morning? It's really early.
Super early for me. You're lucky that you got me, because normally I'd be at work right now.
I feel lucky. Yeah, feels great.
No, but I had today off anyway, so.
Oh, no. So I woke you up early on your day off.
On my vacation, yeah.
I hate that.
I hate you. No, I like you a lot. Well, that's why I did this.
I didn't decide when the show was going to be. I think that a lot of people listen at this time because they're like on their way to work.
Yeah, we're helping them get to work.
How? In a good mood.
In a good mood, yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to do a lot of good today.
I hope so. Again, the number to call in is 503-231-8187. So, Andy, will you tell people who you are?
Yeah.
Why are you so cool?
I woke up like this.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. And I wore it, put on a hat. I've done comedy for like 6 years in Portland, mm-hmm. and I've started at the bottom just with open mics and built myself up to where I could like produce cool shows and get hired to work on cool shows. And when I say cool shows, I just mean like stuff that matters. I don't mm-hmm. know. The problem, I could go on so many different rants.
Well,
but
we have 40 minutes.
We do have 40 minutes.
Please go on a
yeah.
rant. I only got like 6 questions, so you're going to okay. have to answer them with long stuff. So go do your rant. Do it.
Like when I say cool shows, I just mean like a show that an audience is at, because anyone could just say, hey, come do my show. And then you show up at a bar. This yeah. happens to me once a week.
Oh, no.
Where you go to a bar show. And the people in the audience aren't even there for comedy. Yeah, they're like, not an audience. They're
on?
Like, I'm trying to hang out with my friend.
Yeah. And now we feel rude to talk.
Now we're feeling rude. And it's like a hostage situation. So that's part of the art form.
Non-consensual comedy.
Non-consensual comedy, yeah.
So every time when you go up on stage, you have to ask everybody, like, hey, is it okay if I tell jokes?
I do a little bit. Like, I gauge the audience by being like, If the host doesn't know to do this, I'll do it where I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, everybody, who's here for comedy? And then there'll be like 3 people sitting in different parts of the bar clapping. And then there will be a lot of other people having conversations. But at yeah. least I will know who to make eye contact with.
Sure.
So that's a skill that I never thought I'd learn. But yeah, I'm a local comic and I do stuff outside of Portland too, to a little extent. Like I travel for festivals.
Cool.
Like I went to San Francisco 2 weeks ago.
Ooh.
So that was fun. I did Sketchfest, which is like a month-long festival.
Wait, so work is a vacation for you anyway. So it's not really your vacation.
Oh, like, well, I pay for all of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, and like I get to meet cool people.
Oh.
So, you know, I don't get paid to travel yet. You know, maybe I'm going on tour in a couple months. Maybe I'll make some money on that one. But
when does your Netflix special come out?
Probably never.
Oh, no.
Like, I'm in the working class of the comedy economy. Yeah. Where, like, there's not a middle class. There's just, like, people at my level and below who make, you know, like, I make a couple thousand bucks a year. Maybe, uh-huh. like, I think this was my best year ever. Uh-huh. And I made, like, $5,000 this year.
But it just takes, like, one break, right?
Yeah, one break.
You could be on that like Last Comic Standing show.
Oh,
right?
No. Well, I don't know if they do it anymore.
Oh, really? You could be on like America's Got Talent.
I auditioned for that once.
No, and you didn't make it?
I didn't make
obviously,
it.
Obviously, because yeah. you're here at KBISCO.
Because I'm here with you. I got an email to audition. So I sent them a 30-second tape that was just like the essence of Andy Main boiled mm-hmm. down into a 30-second tape, and they mm-hmm. just weren't into it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Did they email you back at least?
Nope, nothing. Like, you've seen Requiem for a Dream, right?
I sure haven't.
Oh, you haven't?
Uh-uh.
Oh, well, there's this lady who gets obsessed with going on television.
Uh-huh.
She's this little old grandma, and she's
yeah,
like...
Yeah, that was me last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, obsessed with being
obsessed
on television.
Obsessed with TV. No, I'm just kidding. She, like, she takes a bunch of drugs because she's trying to lose weight.
Oh, that was me last year.
No, it wasn't.
No, I'm just
she ends up on a subway just, like, disoriented and demented, and she's like, they're going to put me on the TV, Marty.
Oh.
And that felt like when I was 2 years into comedy and I got an audition. I'm like,
but
oh, they're going to do
get
it.
Put on the
that
TV.
I didn't get put on the TV, but oh. I still survived.
But you still did the drugs.
Yeah, tons of them. Constantly. I get paid in drink tickets and methamphetamines.
Oh, that's a good way
yeah.
to get it. It's tax-free.
Tax-free, yeah. I don't really get paid in meth.
Well, yeah, I assume
just
so.
In case any weird tweaker out there wants to start doing comedy.
They're like, I knew it.
That's how you get it.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit about Revolution Comedy.
That's my baby. It's a monthly
that's
show.
That's a weird thing to name your baby.
Oh, yeah. You ought to be in lights.
Revolution Comedy Maine.
Yeah. My baby has no friends because people I don't know how to go on this track.
But
okay.
Your baby sells tickets.
My baby sells tickets. It's a monthly comedy show where we do fundraisers for progressive causes. Mm. I invented it like 2 years ago when Bernie Sanders was coming up.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to find a way to connect activist audiences with fundraising and mm-hmm. comedy. Like, I just wanted to find a good audience. And it's really, you know, like, I didn't know that it would turn into what it did. I just wanted to throw a couple of one-off Bernie Sanders shows. And then I was like, well, this really works. And
yeah.
After the Bernie Sanders shows worked, I moved to a permanent location downtown at a venue called Kickstand Comedy,
mm-hmm.
which is a fun little, like, black box incubator comedy space. It's in the middle of Old Town. I'd recommend people looking it up. It's called Kickstand Comedy. And, I got the show going there for a year, figured out like my vision and my mission with it. And then we moved it over to Curious Comedy Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And our first show at Curious Comedy Theater was the day after Trump won the election. So that
was a great day
for comedy. Just the best
wow.
day for comedy ever.
Everybody's like sad.
It was like I had to take the bus that was delayed because of protests, which I appreciated. No, it's fine. Like, you were on the other side of that bus,
and
I appreciate it. I was like, that's fine, man. I was just weeping on the bus ride to my show, and I was like, we're going to get through it. And there were 30 sad white liberals just mm-hmm. in an audience waiting to be entertained, and we all did our best, but it was like, It was the first time, like, I've had to do comedy on the day of national tragedies before, but that was the worst time I've had to do it.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's like, my show was a direct response to what created Trumpism, so it's not like I could just ignore that giant Republican elephant in the room. Like, we had to address what was going to happen, and I was able to, like, end it with a message of hope, because, like, we were doing a benefit that day for Don't Shoot PDX, and we raised over like $500.
Wow.
So, like, that's a good indication that, like, there's still movement, you know, like, the resistance has been so strong. Like, that's the one thing, that's the silver lining that's happened.
Yeah.
Is seeing, like, our institutions.
And you've probably sold
up
more tickets.
Yeah, it's actually literally been really good for my comedy.
Yeah, it's been really good for a lot of people's, what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean,
a lot of different projects.
Yeah, a lot of different politicians are now famous because they hate Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know? It's like
Adam Schiff.
Yeah, Adam Schiff is like, I mean, even Jeff Merkley is now the national scene, and it's like, wow, that's pretty cool.
At open mic comic than ever have Trump as president. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's see. So we're talking a little bit. We talked a little bit about how you are doing shows in Portland that are sort of like have a political bent.
Mm-hmm.
But I think so. Every Friday, and including tomorrow, watch Bill Maher, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, but everybody hates him.
He seems too old school for you.
I love it. I'm only 24 years old. I don't have a Friday night life
mm-hmm.
because I'm like, well, I probably wouldn't anyway. But I just need to go watch Bill Maher because I love it so much, right? But I'm supposed to hate him.
Yeah.
Because he, like, said the N-word once.
Mm-hmm.
He also, he hates religion, which sometimes he's extra hates.
He disproportionately hates Muslims.
Yeah. No, definitely. That is definitely true. And he, you know, there's a lot of things that he says that he probably shouldn't say. He pisses a lot of people off. But I still enjoy it, but I feel like kind of dirty when I'm like enjoying it and stuff. Like, I'm not supposed to. Luckily, like, none of the people that really hate him are up at 8 a.m. So they're not going to hear that I watch him all the time. But,
yeah. Well, I'm writing a think piece right now.
On Bill Maher?
On you liking Bill Maher.
Oh, no.
I'm
going to
put it on Jezebel.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, and then there was also he, on his first show of this season, sort of talked about the Me Too movement, and he said it was like me McCarthyism or something like
that.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah, so he says things that are bad, but it's entertaining to me, and I don't think there's like a show really like it. But at what point are we supposed to separate the art versus the person? I mean, I assume he's better than, like, if a bunch of other comedians were talking about politics, I assume he's better than a lot of them, right, on politically.
It depends on what region you're in. Like,
okay.
Bill Maher is from a very specific point in comedy history where he was like a New York 80s comic. So that's like the Andrew Dice Clay era of
no
comedy.
No idea who that is.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's
I
good.
Literally only know really like when we're talking national scene, I really only know black comics.
Oh, okay. Well, that's yeah. that's for the best.
I know. Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, they're all really good. So like 80s East Coast, it's just the tackiest sort of like, oh, did I say that? Bada bing.
Yeah.
Style
yeah.
of comedy, like offensive on purpose, mm-hmm. and you know, there's nothing that can get in the way of the punchline. Like no amount of like taste or political correctness can stand in the way. Like you can make. I mean, do you know who Gilbert Gottfried is?
Is he Jewish?
I think so.
He has like the Jewish accent.
Yeah.
Not like, you know.
He was the Aflac Duck guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I know that voice. Yeah.
He got fired for making a joke about the Japanese tsunami that killed like hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah. It's not cool.
Yeah.
But,
he got fired for making a joke the day of. Like that just shows you like they don't care about, you know, there's no such thing as too soon.
Yeah.
So.
But is there not. And I'm just playing devil's advocate. Is there not maybe a place for that?
Oh.
I mean, because everybody copes in a different way. Mm-hmm. Everybody heals in a different way. And I understand that it's offensive to some people, but so is a lot of other people's self-care things or the things that they do to cope.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about a lot of the whiteness in self-care, that's offensive to like mm-hmm. everyone else on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
we keep doing it.
Yeah.
yeah, that's a great question. And I don't think there's anything wrong with too soon, personally. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, Gilbert Gottfried, the same guy I was talking about, he also did like a 9/11 joke within the same week of 9/11 happening. And that was like, for comedy, that was fresh. Like, that was like, whoa, you did that? Wow. And like, things have changed so much since then. But
now you'd have to go away forever, right?
Well, I don't know. Because like, Anthony Jeselnik can get away with doing a really raw joke and people are like, oh, it's just Anthony. But like, if Janine Garofalo did a raw joke on the day of, she'd get crucified for it. So it kind of depends on what your persona is as a comedian.
Uh-huh.
Like, people would have expected Louis C.K. to say something edgy and they'd be like, oh, that's just Louis. But if you took like Amy Schumer and
okay,
she
I'm
did
getting
it,
a trend here.
Yeah. If a woman does it.
Okay. Yeah.
But I was just thinking about comedians that get piled onto a lot, and it's women get piled onto a lot more than men.
Like who?
Like Amy or Janine.
Yeah.
Kathy Griffin.
Exactly. She had to go away forever.
Yeah. She basically ruined her career over a photo, and I think she'll come back, but that's the funny thing is when someone wasn't that good.
Well, I just want to say that CNN's New Year's Eve coverage was horrible without her.
Oh, was
it's
it?
It's actually horrible always, but it was even worse.
Was it Anderson Cooper and...
Anderson Cooper and...
That guy from E?
Yeah.
Andy, whatever.
Yes.
Andy Cohen?
Yes, exactly.
I hate that man.
Really?
I hate him, yeah.
He was mean to you?
No, I just hate everything that comes out of his mouth and I hate the entertainment industry.
Oh,
he represents the entertainment
you
industry.
Are in
but I'm part of it. Yeah.
But what if you become part, will you sell out?
Oh, I would in a second.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I work for a terrible company right now anyway. I'd quit that day job in a second.
Not much of a thing as like a great company.
Yeah. I work for a really bad one. Like if I told people who I worked for.
Is it worse than me liking Bill Maher?
I don't know. I'd say it's a little bit worse.
Okay.
At least.
All right, because that was as low as I was willing to go on the air, so I guess I won't ask you to do it.
I can't tell you because I'd get fired from this terrible company, but I like
that
the
terrible.
Idea of getting kicked out of the activist community over my day job. I think that would be really funny.
Well, I've been kicked out of a whole bunch of activist communities, so my mask wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
Womp womp. Again, the number to call in is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. Let's go ahead and take a call. Why not? Andy, there's an Andy on the line. You're
hello.
Up.
Hello, Andy.
Hey, this is Sean. Are you guys waiting for Sean?
Oh.
Hey, Sean. We'll talk to you.
Oh, great. Right on. Hey, if anybody's looking for a quick laugh, someone posted Elon Musk's stupid car floating through space with Gil Scott Heron's Whitey on the moon. I thought it was just
classic. That's pretty good.
But I had a question for your guest. Do you have anything posted? I've recently had just gained internet access. You know, welcome to the 21st century,
Congratulations.
Right? Congratulations. And I came across a comedian named Jimmy Dore and Stephanie Zambrano. It's called The Jimmy Dore Show. I was wondering if you're familiar with that.
Jimmy Dore is English, isn't he?
No, he's on The Young Turks.
That guy.
And he's got his own show too. I mean,
it's
a voice of reason in this time of madness. So I just I'm interested in checking out your stuff, and I was wondering if you'd heard of him or anything. So thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thanks. Thank you for calling.
Have a good one.
Thanks for being interested in me.
I think so. Go ahead and plug something.
Oh yeah, you guys can all find me on. I have a website called AndyMainComedy.com, and my name is spelled AndyMain. So it's like Andy McDowell and Main Street put together. And I'm on Twitter under @AndyMain. You can add me on Instagram @AndyMain, or I'm on Facebook. I don't know much about Jimmy Dore because I thought he was English. So.
So you obviously don't know. As a comedian, I know, and you don't. I didn't know he was a comedian. Well, I knew he kind of came from comedy, but I didn't know he still did comedy.
I know that he has a big forehead.
Don't know if he does.
I know what he looks like.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
Mm.
We'll find out.
Well,
there's
I don't
no
have
way
the ability
to Google this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's no, this is a weird feeling. There's a question that I just don't know how to find the answer
to. Let's just talk about
it. Well, anyway, this transitions into something that I forgot to talk about at the onset of the show. But Jimmy Dore is good. He's on The Young Turks, but he has, which is it's like a new show on YouTube.
Yeah, I've watched The Young Turks.
Yeah. And Anna Kasparian or something. But they, he actually has like sort of a little bit of beef with the rest of the hosts because he's super anti Russia did anything. And he thinks that this is, I mean, he's very progressive and stuff, but he was somebody that like could never get behind Hillary. And also he thinks that, you know, the Russia thing is overblown.
That sounds like The Intercept a little bit. Like, the angle on of the people that do The Intercept, which is a podcast I really enjoy, and I think that they're right about a lot of things. They're like, this Russia stuff is overblown. And I'm like, I think this Russia stuff is underblown, honestly. Like, they got away with all of the sanctions being lifted.
Yeah.
Like, no sanctions have been placed. They're just trading.
Nobody's talking about it.
Like, they literally got what they wanted by installing a puppet in the White House.
Yeah. You know, I think that the P tape is real.
I do, too.
Yeah. And that he probably, he probably is somewhat blackmailed, or at least blackmailable. We know that because the lawyer paid Stormy Daniels.
Yeah.
So we know you can blackmail this person. So if instead of a adult film star wanting, you know, however many hundred thousands of dollars, it's a country that wants you to just like lift the sanctions, then he'll do it. And then he can like tweet a million things that are controversial when he does it, and then nobody's going to talk about
because Ralph stuck on his Twitter cycle.
Yeah.
Or he can change the news by making another disgusting allegation. He can just act as crudely and disgustingly as he can, and then we're all like upset about that instead of following his path of destruction. Like, so many things have been deregulated and destroyed since he started. Like, there was a dang it, I'm about to, I almost swore.
I won't do that.
Oh gosh. But like, just think about all of the deregulations that have happened, all the disasters that are about to approach. Just,
and I mean, all of the bureaus and stuff that he's basically putting people in charge of them that are there to destroy the bureau.
Like Scott Pruitt.
EPA. And Rick Perry, who wanted to get rid of whatever he's running now, and then now he's in charge of it. I mean,
there's so many white people's names that we have to have learned too. So many mediocre white
man,
dudes.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to know who Scott Pruitt was.
Yeah, or who's the guy who released the Devin Nunez?
Yeah, I mean, that guy is probably of Hispanic heritage, but he acts very white.
Oh, really?
He's been corrupted by the whiteness.
Well, it's not for me to decide if we're kicking him off the island, but
I'd give him to the whites.
Yeah. If we were having like a draft, like you're good to go.
Yeah, he's definitely playing for the whites.
Well, you know, Ted Cruz's name is actually Raphael.
Oh, really?
Yes, and he changed it to Ted because
Isn't
he didn't
his
think
dad
Raphael.
A Cuban immigrant?
Yes. Yeah. But he didn't think that Raphael was like electable in Texas, which is like, it says something about your voters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He's playing for the whites too.
Ted. Yes, just and I mean, like, it, you can't get Ted from Raphael.
No,
it's like there's not very many letters in common. Yeah, it's weird. Wait, I want to talk about.
We never did get much into the political correctness. And
yeah,
comedy
I wanna, thing. Yeah, I want to. Yeah, I want to go back to that because, you know, what Bill talks about a lot is that, like, comedians are scared to do certain jokes, you know, and he thinks that comedy should be basically be off limits. So I went back not too long ago and rewatched Eddie Murphy Raw.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh my God, if he said these things right now, oh, he'd yeah. have to go away forever.
Yeah.
A lot of, like,
and that was
comedy.
So funny when I watched it when I was
yes,
a kid.
Yes, even like Richard Pryor, you know, yeah. and it's like this stuff would not be okay. So, I mean, like, at what point, and I think it's weird because it's basically only music and comedy where we have an art form where we associate morality to it. So, like, nobody would go and see a painting of a nude model or something like that mm-hmm. and then judge the artist for have been making that, right? Or movies. Like, if there's a bunch of gang activity or even sexual assault in a movie, that's okay in that form of art. Mm-hmm. But then for some reason in comedy or in music, if you have these sorts of edgy or controversial things, then we associate it with the person who made it.
Yeah.
Why? And is that good?
Well, I don't think it's good. That's a lot of stuff to unpackage.
Yeah.
I think that with comedy, there's a revolution happening where it's like, when comedy first became big in the 80s, it was a bunch of white dudes with terrible suits making mm-hmm. fun of different portions of society, like people sure. who, you know, people who were gay, the Jews, like it was mm-hmm. very alt-right, like yeah. just in the beginning, because that's easy. It's easy to punch down. And as more diverse voices flooded in the scene, it's created this habitat that is scary for people like Bill Maher
yeah.
to adapt to.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, Sarah Silverman used to have, I mean, she, to me, is one of the most brilliant joke writers. Uh-huh. And I will listen to her older jokes, uh-huh. which are super edgy. I don't even want to repeat them, even though I could quote them.
Yeah.
That are shocking. But there's always like this undertone of like, oh, that's why it's shocking, is because it's like unwrapping this part of you that's gross. You know uh-huh. what I mean? Where you're like coming to this realization about like your feelings on this topic and you become part of the joke. It's very meta and interesting. And it's like, uh-huh. people aren't smart enough to appreciate a joke on multiple levels mm-hmm. by and large, you know, where it's much easier to react to a joke that you're offended because that's just, it's easy to be offended.
Yeah.
It's harder to think. But also jokes, the nature of a joke is to make someone laugh, and then laughing is involuntary when you mm-hmm. think about it. It's yeah. an involuntary reaction, and honestly, science doesn't even know why we do it. So
yeah, I don't know what the evolutionary like
yeah,
reason for laughter
I just think
would be.
Of it as like monkeys calling to each other, kind of. That's the closest okay. I could come up with.
Well,
but
that's a cool profession.
Yeah.
You're a monkey caller.
I'm making monkeys call to each other okay. over dirty topics. but... like Sarah has evolved, you mm-hmm. know, like Sarah looked at her material and she's like, well, that just makes me sound prehistoric if I made that joke anymore. Mm. So she's moved on. And it's like some people like Bill Maher or Adam Carolla or Tim Allen. Do you know who Tim Allen is?
Does he have a
Home
sweater?
Improvement.
Okay. Yeah.
That guy. Yeah. Like he's a Republican and he's like, he's doing activist work about political correctness and free speech in comedy. And it like, imagine listening to Tim Allen, some 6-year-old rich white dude, yell at kids about how it sucks that their feelings are hurt.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to be part of that school.
Yeah, definitely.
And Bill Maher, like, because of his opinions about things, puts a foot in that camp.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like, realizing, oh, wow, maybe I should just apologize and move on.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's like, I do things that are stupid and say things that are stupid all the time. And then if someone calls me out on it, mm-hmm. Then I apologize and I learn from it. Or yeah. you could just stay there like Bill Maher and be a prehistoric old man.
But if people, I mean, as a comedian, the job is to make people laugh. So if you say something bad, but it makes people laugh.
Does it justify the joke?
Yeah. Or is there at least some value in it still?
Well, there's different types of laughs, and I don't like getting the laugh of like, here's
where
what the laugh
feel
sounds
dirty
like
at the end of it.
Yeah, where people go, oh, I hate getting that laugh. I hate getting a laugh where people go, oh, or I hate it when they go, oh, like, because, you know, in a set, you want to build a moment of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to tell people something that's sad about myself or like private so I can like turn it into a joke. And then there's like, you know, the championship feeling at the end of it. Once you turn something sad into something funny, like that feels great. But when I'm doing the setup of the joke and the audience is being overly empathetic and they all go, oh, at the same time, I hate that just as much. So
do you do the pick somebody in the crowd and then joke about them?
No.
No? Is that like not okay?
Oh, I don't have
Daniel Tosh did that to me once.
Daniel Tosh did?
Yeah, I had a girlfriend. We were in LA.
What kind of show were you at?
A comedy show.
Like, was it at a bar or was it at a venue? Was it a comedy club?
It was like, you know, the comedy clubs that we have here.
Okay, so like the comedy store.
Yeah, it wasn't just like a, like Harvey's or Helium or something like that. It was like that. And he like pointed out to me and my girlfriend and he was like, it was like the most basic joke, but everybody thought it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, if she was any whiter, she'd be a ghost. And it's like, man, you really get paid to do that? I could have did that.
Wow, that was
but
easy.
Yeah, but everybody loved it.
Yeah.
And like, she wasn't that white. She's actually pretty tan. It was just in comparison to me, I guess. But I thought it was cool that I was like involved, but I know that some people get super salty about that.
Yeah. I don't have enough guts to do crowd work.
But do you think it's okay?
I think it's fine, yeah.
Yeah.
Curtis Cook, you know Curtis.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the greatest comics to come from Portland. And now he's writing for Jim Jefferies in LA.
Oh,
like,
wow.
So he's definitely...
Wait, comedians don't write their own jokes?
Jim Jefferies' TV show. And
okay.
Jim Jefferies probably doesn't write his own jokes at this point. Like,
wait, what about the big ones?
I think that they get help once you get to a certain level.
Like Dave Chappelle.
Oh, Dave writes all of his own jokes.
Okay, we need to talk about Dave too. So
okay. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, Curtis is great at crowd work.
I called him Dave like I know him. But I don't know. It'd be weird to call him Mr. Chappelle.
Yeah.
I think you just have to say the whole name, Dave Chappelle.
Well, yeah, I know Dave in my heart because everyone talks about Dave Chappelle all the time as like the bastion of free speech and comedy. Like, what about Dave Chappelle? Would you censor Dave Chappelle?
Okay, well,
like,
let's just do that now then.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, Curtis is great at crowd work. That's all I was saying.
Okay.
I can't do it. But with Dave, like, I had this discussion at Helium 2 weeks ago.
Wait, let's set the stage a little bit. Dave Chappelle is obviously a like
the most
pillar
successful
of,
comic of
really?
Our generation.
More than like Kevin Hart? Not more than Kevin Hart.
I think Kevin
because
Hart.
Because Kevin Hart did the movie thing.
Yeah, and then, he did.
But like when we're talking just based only on stand-up and stuff, I'd say Dave Chappelle, right?
Yeah. And he's the legend of our time right now.
He's amazingly talented.
Yeah. But he's also transphobic as heck.
Yes.
He says terrible things.
Yeah.
And it's like, is it worth it? Like, imagine, and I'm not talking to you specifically, but this is my point of view, is like, imagine that you're a trans person in a theater full of people.
And you're the butt of the joke.
You're the butt of the joke, and you're like a secret trans person because you're scared about.
Yes.
And like, you can't talk to your family about it.
Uh-huh.
And then this whole theater is literally laughing at you. Like,
and they don't know they're laughing at the person right next to them, and you know. Yeah.
I mean, that's just such a sad, sad thing that's definitely happened. It's absolutely 100% happened.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm not, I can't take, I just don't cover topics that I don't personally have a stake in. Like, I would never talk about the black experience. I'd never talk about the trans experience because
you don't. Because I haven't experienced it.
Yeah. So I can't cover it.
And but do we throw them away?
Oh, no, you just amplify the voices of the people that have those experiences and put them on the mic instead.
But is it okay for us to continue to support Dave Chappelle even with our ears? You know, like, should we stop listening to him?
Well, I did.
Really? Completely?
I mean, I know all of his tricks. You know, like, I'm not surprised by anything he says because part of doing comedy is ruining comedy. You know, like, it's hard for me to listen to comedy the same way that I used to before I started doing it.
Yeah, it's like if you're a cook and then you go to a restaurant and then
and
you're
you know
like,
all the
I
ingredients
know how
in
they
it.
Did that.
Yeah, it's not. That's the best metaphor. Thank you. I'm gonna keep that.
I don't know if you can have it. We'll talk about it later. Well,
but I'm not. I mean, he's great. The crowd loves him. He doesn't say anything that blows my mind anymore. I watched his latest his last two. He did two specials.
Yeah, the one sitting down, I really didn't like.
Yeah,
it was just boring.
It was boring.
Yeah,
and
which was disappointing.
He knows, and he said this out loud in interviews and stuff. He knows that he doesn't have to work hard anymore,
mm-hmm.
so he just doesn't.
But that first one I thought was hilarious. I mean, other than
I can't even like he did two years ago, and then two this year.
Yeah, he did the one where he was talking about stovetop stuff, or like the you didn't see that one?
I don't know, because it's like I've seen so many jokes since then.
Yeah, he said I write jokes backwards. And then he said, he was like, sometimes I just start with the punchline. And then he said it, and then he, which I can't say, and then he continued along, and then he randomly just ended the joke with that same punchline, and then he's, and it was like amazing.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I told you, I'm dope.
That sounds
I'm
good.
That good. No, it was good. It was good. You should, well, I mean, you can't watch it because you're boycotting him.
You retelling it.
No, I'm not good at that. Yeah, that sucks. That
retelling really sucks. A joke is hard.
No, and it's like so I really like comedy, and this is a good city, I think, to like comedy in.
It's one of the best.
And so, I mean, like every night almost you could go watch some form of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And but like then like I'll try and like retell the joke and I just can't do it.
Oh,
like
no,
I need to
either.
Go with like a notepad, and then but then that's like stealing. But well, I don't, I'm not going to sell them. I just want to tell people.
Yeah, you can't, it's really hard to retell a joke. Like I have a hard time with it too.
Yeah. And there's context and the atmosphere.
Persona.
I mean, there's sometimes where like I've seen because also the bad part about Portland comedy is I hear the same jokes a lot.
Oh yeah.
Because one person has a set that like they like will sprinkle in jokes and stuff. So if you're constantly going to comedy, you're gonna hear a lot of the same.
I
jokes.
I know everyone's jokes.
Yeah, but sometimes they like land differently just based on the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Or the timing. If you stop for a pause at one point in a joke, the audience is just going to naturally laugh. And then you realize, there's like a reason for them to laugh there that I never heard before.
Yeah.
And then you change your timing around and that changes the joke structure. And then you get the audience to laugh at different parts. And then you realize if I don't make them laugh here, they're going to laugh harder at the end. So there's interesting stuff there too.
Yeah.
But
it's not just like tell it. You know, there's
there's lots of interesting nuance. Like, I mean, I consider myself to let's go to this discussion about Dave Chappelle that I was having at Helium in the green room, where like I was hosting a show that night. The headliner was like this East Coast beefhead, like this New Jersey accented, like giant muscle
I love
man
that accent.
It's a great
it's
accent for
accent.
Comedy.
Yeah,
I can't even do it. I'll sound like an idiot.
Yeah,
but hey, Baba Booey, you know, that kind of thing. Like that's the best accent for comedy.
It.
And he and the other feature were just talking, worshiping Dave Chappelle. Like they were just like talking. They were bonding. It was two men talking, and I'm like, I disagree.
Yeah.
Like I had to stand up and just be like, what about being that person in the room that is getting mocked?
Definitely.
Like,
yeah.
And what about vulnerable populations? It just seems to me like the whole idea of like give it's like letting someone get away with hate speech is in comedy is the equivalent of giving poor people food boxes instead of food stamps. It's like,
good. Wow. You're checking the boxes out for me.
I did it.
We do have a caller I need to get to. Linda.
Hello, Linda.
Hi. And thanks for the show. I do find you guys entertaining, though I disagree a lot about some of the comedy. I wanted to say Bill Maher's Islamophobia is not, it's like you said, imagine being a trans person in an audience and hearing those kind of trans jokes. He piled on Islam at the same time as the right wing did.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, sorry, I'm nervous about this for some reason.
No,
that's
don't
okay.
Be nervous.
I think it's harmful.
I agree.
I think it's harmful to Muslim people all over, and I don't like that kind of comedy. I think that is right-wing comedy, and it can be harmful. It boosters up the bad guys.
Well, Linda,
and
my point
and
was not.
He's also very. Wait, let me finish.
Yeah,
he's
of course.
Also very misogynistic,
mm-hmm.
and I don't expect you to like what's right. I don't like what's right. You know what somebody decides is right and other people decide is wrong, but I want to recognize the impact of that kind of quote humor. It's not funny to me. He was a long time ago, but I think he is extremely right wing in his outlook, actually. Whether he hates Christianity or not, the way he piled on, and I don't watch him anymore, but I saw a bunch of him piling on people that are Muslim right when That was the attack when Muslims were under attack in our country. That's bad. So I just wanted to bring that out and say, talk about that a little bit, please. It also reminds me of when Arsenio Hall was attacking Roseanne Barr every night with fat jokes. And what she said was, what's cutting edge about fat jokes about me? And she took him on really big, and he went down big.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say those and let you talk off the air.
Thank you so much for your call.
We'll take that. Ironically, Roseanne Barr is now a Trump supporter.
Oh, my goodness. So I want to thank that caller so much for sharing that.
Yeah, that was good points
and,
to make.
And those were great points. And I'm glad that now I have the opportunity to clarify. I don't enjoy those jokes at all. My question is, do we have to throw away the person because some of their jokes are bad?
And I say yes.
And you say yes.
throw them in the garbage.
And, you know, I say that, you know, I'm not giving him necessarily any money or anything like that, nor am I supporting those. But, you know, do we have to throw away, like, Floyd Mayweather is a horrible person, mm-hmm. but he's a great boxer. But so do we boycott the fights because he's a horrible person?
In a perfect world, sure.
Okay. But, what about misogyny in hip hop?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Do we boycott Tupac, who was a convicted rapist, I think, or a sexual assaulter? Do we boycott, a lot of hip hop artists for what they say? I just feel like I have a lot of trust in the populace and consumers to be able to listen to someone and say, no, I really disagree with that, mm-hmm. and not support that statement. And just because you're listening to them, you're not necessarily supporting the bad stuff. And I understand that I could be completely wrong.
There's so many shades of gray to it. And there's, like, when I say in a perfect world, that's me copping out because I'm saying, yeah, that'd be great if pigs could fly out of my butt. You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah. I don't know if that'd be great.
No, I was quoting Wayne's World there, and that got lost on you. Cause
it wouldn't be awesome, though.
No, it wouldn't be. It'd be
I wouldn't
funny.
Enjoy that.
It'd be really funny.
Not for the person experiencing it. Okay. Well, it depends what you're into. Anyway.
We are going to, like, morning zoo radio with that segue. I'm not supposed to be awake at 8 in the morning. I just want the listeners of KBOO to know that.
I'm supposed to be at work, so I hope my boss isn't listening.
Yeah. I hope that the people's minds who you shape and mold aren't listening to you ever, whenever you shape and mold them.
Why? Because I'm not telling people go listen to Bill Maher and Dave Chappelle. I'm saying that I feel like it's lazy to say, I didn't like this, so we throw you away.
Okay, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And it doesn't lead to accountability whatsoever.
But there's, like, really cool people whose voices aren't being heard because these dinosaurs are sucking all the oxygen out of the room. So it's like...
But isn't that a capitalism problem, and, you know, they basically have that's the corporations funding them, right?
Yeah, and that's why Mayweather is never gonna not box, is because of all of the money that's behind him.
Yeah.
So
here's another example. Mike Tyson, horrible person, was a convicted rapist, admitted rapist. Are we not supposed to watch Hangover?
I mean, we watched it not knowing Mike Tyson was going to be in it. And then when he was in it, that made the movie really good. Like, that's the weird
part.
Why
is that okay?
Why is that okay? I don't know. Like, that movie came out 10 years ago.
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, we didn't know any better.
But he hasn't really had to go away again.
The Me Too movement hadn't happened yet, but we'll see how far that movement takes us.
But we should have had... I just think we should have been consistent, right? Like, if we have to throw away...
I mean, is Woody Allen
going
to make another movie?
Oh, that's worse.
It is worse.
No, wait, maybe it's not worse. For my natural reaction was that's worse. But why?
Why, like,
why is that worse than
really
Mike Tyson?
Really good actors that are in Woody Allen movies, knowing what he did. Like Kate Winslet, one of my faves, she just made a movie with him. Am I going to throw Kate Winslet away? I love her. I don't know what to do about it.
So we have one more caller. Jeff, we're kind of up against it, so if you could keep it a little short.
Okay. I have a question, and I don't know comedy scene in Portland at all, even though I've lived here a long time. And where can I go to find out, like, about events, where I can go and listen to it? I love comedy.
There's a blog called PDX Stand-Up Blog, and there's a lot of shows on there. Helium Comedy Club is a great venue, and mm-hmm. Curious Comedy Theater is a great venue. One of the best shows in town happens every Monday at Eastburn, and it's called It's Gonna Be Okay. And that's just a fantastic show, and it's full of diverse comedians. There's also a really fun one on Wednesday nights at 10 o'clock at Mississippi Pizza, and that one is called You're Welcome. And that's thrown by three dudes who are just super funny. And then I throw a show once a month at Curious Comedy Theater called Revolution Comedy, and we do it on fourth Mondays. Our next one is on February 26th, and we're doing a benefit for homeless outreach.
Wow.
A very quick other question. I noticed one of the really fun things about listening to old Soviet comedy is that they laugh at themselves.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we got to go.
We got to go.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks for your comments. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening.
I'll ask it another time.
Okay. I'll be here next week. Andy won't. So go ahead. Where do we find you? What can you plug? What's up?
Go to andymainecomedy.com to look at all my dates. And my name is spelled A-N-D-I-E-M-A-I-N. I'm at Andy Main on Twitter and at Andy Main on Instagram. And thanks so much, everybody. This has been a lot of fun.
Did you have fun?
I had a great time.
Yeah.
We did it.
You looking at me like it wasn't that fun.
I just look like crap because it's early.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. I'm Gregory McKelvey. You can find me on Twitter at Gregory McKelvey. Thanks for listening to KBOO.
Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth.
Help us help you keep Portland weird. Join Contessa de la Luna of the World Famous Confessional for the 6th annual Contessa de la Luna Valentine's Spectacular and Fashion Show. We're giving away a $100 cash prize plus live performances by Contessa de la Luna. Get your weird on and bring a date. Advance tickets available at Brown Paper Tickets. All proceeds benefit your community radio station, KBOO. That's Thursday, February 15th, 7 to 9:45 p.m. Feel the love of your other Contessa de la Lunatics. Contessa de la Luna's Valentine's Spectacular, Thursday, February 15th at the Clinton Street Theater, 7 p.m.
For decades, KBOO News and Public Affairs has welcomed radical and spirited activists in the Northwest and beyond. KBOO is central to connecting the world to what is happening in Portland and the Northwest. We put the mic in everyone's hands. Help amplify the stories of people in your own backyard, invest in future media makers, and join us on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Radioland. I am Eldridge Cleaver, the former Minister of Information of the Black Panther Party. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio. I